Hello and welcome to this Royal College of GPs podcast, created as part of the Royal College of GP and Health Education England's Clinical Priority Programme for Sepsis. My name is Dr. Rachel Marsden and I'm the College's Clinical Support Fellow for Sepsis, as well as a portfolio first five GP living and working in Sheffield. This is the second of two podcasts around sepsis and learning disabilities, which are the result of the recent Learning Disabilities Mortality Review report, which found sepsis to be the second most prominent cause of death in the cases reviewed, following pneumonia closely as the first. In the past 2 years, the Sepsis Clinical Priority Programme has discussed the use of the National Early Warning Scores and physiology in general when it comes to patients with suspected sepsis. However, what happens when physiology is not possible? It may be that the patient is unable to cope with observations being taken, is not able to comply, or that the staff looking after these patients are not trained in observations. For these patients, soft signs of deterioration take on extra significance. My guest today is Andy Cook, Chief Nurse at Interserve. He's done some interesting work with soft signs in the community and has very kindly agreed to talk to me about them today. Andy, welcome and thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Andy, I wonder if you could just start by giving us a little bit of background about yourself and what you do.
Okay. Well, I'm the chief nurse responsible for governance, quality, compliance, professional standards, setting the agenda for the way in which we go about caring for our patients, our clients, as we sometimes call them, living at home in the community. So my remit is to ensure that we've got the right systems in place to look after people safely.
Okay. And what? Tell me a little bit about your background.
So I trained to be a nurse about 30 years ago and worked clinically in accident emergency, and then was Director of Nursing in the private hospital sector, and then worked in regulation with both the Healthcare Commission and CQC, and then moved into what I'm doing now, which is the first environment that's based in the community that I've worked in, which is very, very different from managing care safely as opposed to a hospital setting.
Okay, and tell me a little bit about your clients who you look after.
So we look after about, I guess, just shy of 1,000 people across the country, includes Scotland and Wales. Relevant to soft signs, we look after people at probably at the more complex end of home care, so people with acquired brain injuries, traumatic brain injury, lots of people with genetic disorders, some of which are completely unknown. They may not have been diagnosed previously. Mm. We've got lots of children with tracheostomy. We ventilate probably around 100 people or so any one time. And a number of people with learning disabilities or cognitive impairment for a whole range of different reasons. Mm-hmm. So a real broad spectrum of patients, but all of them very complex with lots of healthcare needs. So most of our patients, clients are funded through the NHS as opposed to local authority, because they sit under healthcare really rather than social care.
Okay, so it sounds like your clients provide your staff with a wide variety of skills and challenges. I mentioned that you and your team have done a lot of work on soft signs, and you've mentioned this yourself. What led to this work coming about?
So, if I'm honest, it came from a conversation at Patient Safety Congress 3 years ago. Went to see a presentation where the Wessex AHSN were talking, and we just hightailed it round to their stand in the exhibition room and began a conversation, really. And I think our interest came from having looked at how do we pick up deterioration more quickly in an environment where, firstly, you don't want that environment to be too medicalised. Mm, people are living at home, and it's meant to feel like you're living at home. Most of the care is provided by very trained but yet unqualified staff, so they're healthcare assistants, and that's pretty standard. That's the model for home care. Some packages will have registered nurses in them, but that isn't the norm. So those staff aren't expected to make complex clinical judgments, and you don't want them making complex clinical judgments. So therefore, you can't rely to the same extent as you would in a hospital on that kind of intuitive sense of something's not quite right, and let's begin to look at that in a bit more detail. And we don't tend to have equipment in place just in case. So people don't have a SATS monitor or even a BP machine unless there is a genuine clinical reason for their ongoing care to have it. You wouldn't have it just in case you need it. You don't have a crash trolley.
No.
So therefore, looking and using things like news or physiological measurement-based systems is extremely difficult. And we had tussled for some time about how do we come up with a system which will allow us to spot those patients beginning to deteriorate a little bit earlier. Because without that, you tend not to get it flagged to you until they are presenting really genuinely clinical signs, like they're vomiting or they've got a running a temperature or they feel very unwell. And so you've missed that window of early intervention, which often means that they then transfer to hospital, which means that you've got an admission which may have been avoidable, all of the concomitant issues around getting them back home, the complexity of discharge. So we were really interested in trying to find some way of equipping our care staff with a mechanism that would allow them to just at least flag to us that there was something not quite right, and we could then bring in clinicians, either nursing or the GP, for example, to do a more complex review and decide whether or not there is genuinely something that should be treated.
Okay. So what did you and your team put in place to try and ensure that these subtle changes were picked up?
So we thought, to begin with, we thought we'd come up with some sort of adapted news system, some sort of scoring tool, or we would come up with a very complex training program to try and equip those staff with some skills around spotting deterioration, but really still tussling with the fact that they aren't there to make clinical decisions, and you've got to be very careful about not crossing that line. So what we came up with was a sense that for the patients who were transferred to hospital in an unplanned way, we wondered whether, if you looked at the notes in the kind of week or so leading up to that, we wondered whether there might have been things in there that, with hindsight, you might have thought, actually, that was a bit unusual for them. It wasn't in itself clinically significant, but it was unusual. So, for example, they had a particularly bad night's sleep. That may happen to any of us, but for them, that was quite unusual. They were somebody who slept very solidly normally. So we did a case notes review of a number of patients that had ended up being transferred into hospital in an unplanned way. And lo and behold, there were all these things that you could have used as triggers. So on the basis of that, we thought, let's get them into some sort of a list, what all these various indicators were. And can we then begin to mould them into a system which would allow us to say to the care staff, if you notice that again, then just ring us and let's talk about it. What was interesting is that those indicators were very different from one patient to another, from one client to another. So they were very variable. So what we've got now is a series of about 100 or so, about 120 soft signs, as we've ended up calling them, which apply to variably in each of our clients. So it allows us to do an assessment of the individual, understand what is normally quite stable for them, and pick those things as indicators of concern if they were ever to change in an unexplained way. So if I go back to the sleep pattern, if you do an assessment and you're just looking at activities of daily living, and the assessment of their sleep is that they have a very stable nightly routine, they sleep very solidly, that very rarely changes, then that becomes a really good proxy measure for concern if in future that were to suddenly change. So the way we now use them is to look at trying to find about between 5 and 10 out of that 120 which feel very, very stable for that individual, and then we build them into a care plan which simply says, if that changes, regardless of the reason, just tell us, and then that allows us to trigger a review by a clinician.
Okay, so it's not saying that there's definitely something wrong if any of these signs come forward, but it means just let us know.
Yeah, and I think, Rachel, what's important is that you are changing the mindset, not really of the staff raising the flag or spotting it and ringing it through, but you're changing the mindset of the person receiving it on the other side. Because what you're saying to them is it's not for you to quiz that member of care staff to explain why they've raised the issue. It's for you to convince yourself there isn't anything to be worried about. It's really subtle, but it fundamentally turns around the assessment once they've rung it through, once they've called it through.
And what have you noticed since this system has been implemented?
So it's quite difficult to come up with really solid data because a lot of this is very soft by definition.
Yes.
But we do really think we have avoided probably in the region of 30 to 40 admissions with people who we've managed to get intervention with earlier. And we know that we've done that intervention sooner than we would have previously. And previously, they would have been admitted. So there's a little bit of an extrapolation there, but we are reasonably comfortable that by putting this in place, we are avoiding admissions and transfers to hospital and all of the problems that come with that when admissions are unplanned in terms of both getting the client in and then planning the discharge back home. So definitely triggering that earlier intervention and hopefully keeping them at home and just treating that issue at home.
You've mentioned yourself that this is very difficult to get data on because obviously it's very soft and the suite of soft signs are very individual for each individual patient. What's next for the scheme?
So I think the next thing, it does feel to me as though soft signs are definitely gathering some pace, and there are a number of different ways that soft signs are being used and different models where you see soft signs being used. And it does feel like there's a bit of a coalition of people who want to begin to formulate it into possibly a single model. So if we look at EWS over the years, started off with a number of different EWS frameworks in place before we ever got to news. And I think what's interesting now is to bring people who are interested in the use of soft signs together and see whether or not there is something much more structured or that could be applied more widely, and we do begin to move to a single model. So I think some of that work I'm involved with, and we're having those conversations and bringing people together. But certainly, you know, some of the environments where I've talked about this, that always spurs people to get in touch and say, that sounds really interesting, and we're doing this or we're doing the other. So I'm not saying we've got it absolutely nailed, and I'm not altogether sure we have. But it's real progress, and it's interesting listening to what other people are doing to then see whether or not there is a standard model which we might be able to come up with. The answer may be that there isn't, that soft science, the beauty of soft science is that it should be flexible and be applied in different ways with different client groups or patient groups. But unless you talk about it, you'll never know, will you?
No. And how has it been received by the carers and by the clients themselves and their clients' relatives?
Certainly with the clients, I think they like it because they're able to talk to you about signs which are very individual to them, and they may not feel are sort of valid in a sort of standard medical model. So they're able to talk to you about what they actually experience. I think they like it because they are negotiating with you which ones you should include, and so it's very much sort of co-produced plan of care, which I think is really important. The care staff really engage with it because, again, their experiences of working with people, we really draw on that, certainly if they've been working with the client for some time, and they find it so easy. And I think what's really been the beauty of this is it's not involved any training, because they all are used to working with care plans. That's pretty standard. That's how we deliver all the care that we provide. So all we've done is put another care plan in which says, if you spot these signs, pick the phone up and talk to us.
Yeah.
So it's really simple to put in place, and simply draws on the way these people work anyway. And so it doesn't feel like a challenge or something new that they've got to get their head around. It's just another care plan which they've been very engaged with.
I should imagine it's quite useful as well when you've got changeover of staff or maybe new staff who don't know the client particularly well, or maybe even, such as my case, an out-of-hours GP who doesn't know the client very well, when they've got this list of, well, this is what they're normally like. Mm. This is normal for them. Mm. This is not normal for them.
Absolutely.
You can use that to
absolutely
assess them.
And I think a lot of the soft signs draw on two types of normal, really. So you've got, what are they just like as a person and what's normal for them? What would you see on a normally good day? And that allows you to spot those things which, if they were to change, would be so unusual, you really should take notice of it. You've also got people with a long-term condition which will, from time to time, exhibit clinical signs. But they might get even earlier signs which are normal for them, but quite unusual. So, for example, a tingling toe.
Yes.
But that is very much linked to a condition which you know that they live with. So that allows you to look at, when that condition begins to exacerbate, what normally happens. But again, very, very bespoke to them. So all of us, and you know, hopefully everyone listening to this, would be able to give you the normal signs and symptoms of, you know, an exacerbation of asthma or an exacerbation of a mental health condition. But for every individual patient, there may be these very subtle, peculiar experiences they have, which even precede, you know, an increase in shortness of breath or exhibiting genuine, you know, psychological changes. Yeah. And so those allow you to say, let's pick those up as soft signs, as indicators for them of an exacerbation of a condition. Mm. And that's normal for them leading up to an exacerbation. So that might allow you to pick that up sooner.
Yeah.
So there's this normally good and this normally bad, if you like, which both of those together would allow you to come up with a really robust suite of soft signs. And that's work we're looking at the moment. And do we separate them out? And is that the next step? And actually, how do you assess those things in a more structured way?
Yeah, so how do you get the evidence whether this is this working or
absolutely
not?
Absolutely.
Well, who knows what the future holds? It's certainly really, really interesting. And thank you for coming today, Andy, to talk to us about
it. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you very much for listening.